This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, and we like to tell stories about everything here on this show, from sports to arts, from history to business, and your stories, too. Send them to OurAmericanNetwork.org, and we'll produce them and send them right back and put them right back up on the airwaves. You are the Our in Our American Stories. And our own Alex Cortez now brings us a story by one of our favorite storytellers, the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, Larry Reed.
In the fall of 1938, Nicholas Winton was a young stockbroker in London, England. It was a tumultuous year. In March of that year, Adolf Hitler had seized Austria.
He crossed the border near his birthplace at Braunau. The people rejoiced at this first act of expansion.
Later during the summer, he rattled his saber at Czechoslovakia. As a result of that, there was a conference in Munich, Germany, in September of 1938, at which time Hitler sat down with Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain of Britain and representatives of France. The Western Allies said, if you promise not to go any further, we'll give you a part of Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland, but go no further than that. The world breathed a sigh of relief. In fact, Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain came back saying that we had peace in our time. It was less than 2 months after the Munich conference that the infamous Kristallnacht occurred. That was the event involving Nazi destruction of Jewish synagogues, storefronts, and even the invasion of Jewish homes. That helped to drive many Jews from Germany, Poland, and neighboring countries away from Germany and in the direction of Prague, Czechoslovakia. As the weeks wore on, it was apparent to Nicholas Winton that war was likely to come, perhaps within a matter of weeks. Nonetheless, he planned a Christmas vacation in December to Switzerland. Just before departing, a friend who worked in the British Embassy in Prague called and said, "Don't go to Switzerland. Come here instead. There's something I have to show you." So Nicholas went to Prague. What his friend wanted him to see were refugee camps full of thousands of Jewish refugees. It was the onset of winter. The conditions were awful. They were makeshift camps, tents, and that's if you were lucky. The weather was getting colder, and Winton worried that many of these people would not survive. As he walked through the camp, he was struck by so many parents who came to him and said, "Will you take my children?" They literally wanted him to take their children to another country. This is a perfect stranger to them, so you can imagine how desperate these parents were. They knew they were in harm's way. They knew that Hitler wasn't going to be satisfied with the Sudetenland, that he would soon march on the rest of Czechoslovakia. They knew that they couldn't get out. No country would accept them. But they wanted their children, at least, to get the safety. Winton could have said, "Sorry, there's nothing I can do. I'm just one person. Or I have a vacation on my calendar. See you later." Surely, most other people would have walked away. But instead, being the man of character that he was, he offered to help. Nicholas Winton organized an effort to get as many children out of Czechoslovakia and to foster homes as possible. Winton began writing letters and sending telegrams to governments around the world, appealing to them, "Please, if I get the children out, will you allow them to enter your country?" The sad thing is, in spite of all the governments that he wrote to, dozens of them, only two responded positively, his own Britain and Sweden. All the others closed their eyes and their doors and their hearts. Winton used every possible channel in his search for foster homes. There were 5,000 children on his list. At no charge, British newspapers published Winton's advertisements, showing pictures of children for whom foster parents were needed. Winton also took the lead in raising the funds to pay for the operation. The expenses included the 50 British pounds that the Home Office required for each child, the equivalent of $3,500 per child in today's dollars, to cover the costs of any future repatriation. Winton ultimately organized 9 rail transports of children from Prague to Britain, with a few going to Sweden. The Nazis knew a good deal of what Winton was up to. They spied on him, but they didn't forcibly try to prevent him from getting the children out. If you think back to the time, a war hadn't yet started, so the Nazis still felt some need to sort of keep up appearances, but the operation was always at risk. Picture in your mind the unimaginable. The railway station in Prague, when anguished parents and relatives loaded the children onto the trains and said what would be for most their final goodbyes. Boys and girls, many younger than 5, peered out the windows of the steaming trains, wondering about their uncertain future. No one knew if they would ever be reunited with their families again. The first 20 of Winton's children left Prague on March 14, 1939. Hitler's troops overran all of Czechoslovakia the very next day. But the volunteers kept working, sometimes forging documents to slip the children past the Germans. By the time World War II broke out on September 1, the rescue effort had transported 669 children out of the country in 8 separate groups by rail. The only reason he wasn't able for years to talk about this effort was what happened to the 9th transport, the biggest of them all, 250 children. All of them had foster families waiting for them back in Britain.
And when we come back, we continue with the story of Nicholas Nicky Winton. More on his story here on Our American Stories. And by the way, Larry Reed's book, Real Heroes, go to Amazon.com, look it up, check it out. It's a terrific read, and we don't hear enough about stories like this each and every day. And we should. When we come back, more on the story of Nicky Winton here on Our American Stories. This is Our American Stories, and we return to Larry Reed and his story about his friend Nicky Winton. At this point, Winton had organized 8 train rescues of 669 mostly Jewish children out of Czechoslovakia, right before World War II broke out. But then came his 9th train rescue, the biggest of them all, with 250 children on it.
That transport was sitting at Prague Station on the 1st of September, 1939. That was the day that World War II broke out with the invasion by Germany of Poland, and the Nazis stopped all rail transports leaving Prague. None of those 250 children in that final transport ever made it. None of them survived. Of the children who did make it out, the other 669, almost none of them ever saw their parents again. While we celebrate the 669 children that Winton saved, his conscience was always stung by the 250 that he couldn't save. Winton immediately joined the Royal Air Force, and for the next 6 years, he fought against the Germans. After the war, he met the woman who became his wife, but never told her what he had done before the war, and the story sort of died out. It wasn't until 1988, 50 years after this effort to save 669 children, Nicholas Winton's wife was going through her attic, and she found a box full of visa material, pictures of children, and a long list of names. She didn't know what it was, and she asked her husband, "What's this about?" And Winton finally told her about the effort he had organized in 1938 and 39. After Nicky's wife had shared the story with certain important people in British media, Nicky was summoned to a television station for the taping of a program called That's Life. It was a popular program in Britain, featuring a special guest and usually involving the introduction of people he had had some connection with in times past.
Nicky Winton sat in the audience with everyone else, not knowing that he was the special guest, or that the apparent strangers surrounding him in the audience were actually people he had a connection to.
They got me there in a way under false pretenses. Well, then I was sat in a seat which was focused on the camera, and I became part of this program that I didn't know that I was going to meet for the first time.
This is his scrapbook. There are all kinds of fascinating pictures in it. Perhaps you can see this is a picture of Nicholas Winton himself with one of the children he rescued. If you look at the very back of this scrapbook, fascinating things in it, all the letters. But back here is the list of all the children. This is Vera Dearmont, now Vera Gissing. We did find her name on his list. Vera Gissing is with us here tonight. Hello, Vera. And I should tell you that you are actually sitting next to Nicholas Winton. Mr. Winton, would you mind hanging on to your handkerchief, because we found two more of those children. One of them is called Hanno Schnabel. He was only 11 when he came over here. We have his passport with all the official stamps on it. I don't know if you can see. This is how he got out. He told us.
I don't know how my rescue was arranged. I had no idea when I left my parents at Prague Station that I would never see them again. My older brother was supposed to come here in September, but war broke out and I never saw him again either. I hoped all through the war that they would survive, but they were gassed in a concentration camp. I've often wondered who was responsible for organising my rescue. I would dearly love to meet him and thank him for helping us children without any hope of acknowledgement.
Hanush's name is on Nicholas Winton's list. They call him Hans there, you see. Hanush is here tonight, so you too can thank Mr. Winton. Is there anyone in our audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton? If so, could you stand up, please?
Over 25 people stood up, and then Nicky stood up. He turned around to look at all of them, going from one face to another. In complete shock, he couldn't muster any words, but simply nodded at them, smiling and crying. Back to Larry Reed on Vera Gissing.
Vera Gissing, one of the children Winton saved and now well into her 80s, puts the rescue mission in perspective. Of the 15,000 Czech Jewish children taken to the camps, only a handful survived, she says. Winton had saved a major part of my generation of Czech Jews. Vera's story is an especially poignant one. She was 10 years old when she left Prague on the 5th train on June 30, 1939. Two of her cousins were on the 9th train that never made it to freedom. Her mother died of typhus 2 days after liberation of the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp to which she was sent. Her father was shot in a Nazi death march in December 1944. Vera has no doubt about her own fate had it not been for Nicholas Winton. Why did Nicky Winton do this? It certainly was not for the plaudits it might bring him. Indeed, he never told anyone about his achievement for half a century. Nicky says he kept quiet about the rescue mission because, It was such a small part of my life. Indeed, the operation spanned only 8 months while he was still working at the stock exchange, and it was prior to his marriage. Still, to me, it seemed the explanation was inadequate, so I pressed him on the point. When the war started and the transport stopped, I immediately went into the RAF, the Royal Air Force, he told me. When peace came, what was a 35-year-old man to do? Traverse the country looking for boys and girls? At the end of the war, Nicky Winton was busy restarting his own life. What he did to save so many others just 6 years earlier was behind him and over, and for all that he knew, the children might have returned to their homeland, as indeed some did. Wherever they were, he told me, I had good reason to assume they were safe and cared for. Indeed, among the ranks in later life would be doctors, nurses, therapists, teachers, musicians, artists, writers, pilots, ministers, scientists, engineers, entrepreneurs, and even a member of the British Parliament. I told him this, you didn't simply save 669 children. Your story will elevate the moral eloquence of lending a loving hand when lives are at stake. Someday, somewhere, perhaps another man or woman will confront a similar situation and will rise to the occasion because of your example. This is why the world must know what you did and why we think of you as a hero, even if you do not.
And great job, as always, Alex, on that. And thanks to Larry Reed, who does a terrific job for us. And you can pick his book up at fee.org. And again, the book is Real Heroes. And very often we do stories like this because we know that the real power of storytelling is its imitative power. You know, we had helped the Toohey family long ago with The Blind Side, the book The Blind Side. A group of friends of mine had gotten behind that book when it had little help and couldn't find a home. And the Toohey's were the family that, of course, adopted that football player that ended up playing at Ole Miss and then going to the NFL. But he was a kid just wandering around the streets. And Leanne Toohey just decided, hey, let's adopt that kid. He needs love. He needs a home. And what the Toohey family had told the world about the power of that story and then the movie, what moved them the most was all the letters they got from people saying that because of that story, it inspired them to adopt too. And there were thousands of letters, which means tens of thousands of people decided to imitate the Toohey's in love and adopt a stranger. And by the way, we also do a lot of these Holocaust stories for a reason. 2/3 of millennials don't know what Auschwitz is. And that's why we partner with the USC Shoah Foundation to broadcast their incredible archive of 55,000 video testimonies. And to ensure that the Holocaust never happens again, well, we've got to remember. So I urge folks to visit the USC Shoah Foundation's website. Google it, USC Shoah Foundation, and explore their archives. Share it with your family. Bring it to your school. These stories need to be told. They need to be repeated and understood. Nicholas Nicky Winton's story here on Our American Stories.